Identity crisis. Identity crisis, which will be a good theme for maybe even a couple more weeks in the month as well. But happy Hanukkah. Chag Sameach. Okay, nobody's called me on the spelling. How do you spell Hanukkah? I will actually make you allow you to copy this at Sandy's party. Is it H-A-N-U-K-K-A-H? C-H-A-N-U-K-A-H? H-A-N-U-K-A-H? H-A-N-N-U-K-A-H? I like it because you really can't misspell it. Okay, and it goes on. It goes on with all these. However, modern technology, okay, has evaluated this, and this is the trivia that's so important. The first spelling, H-A-N-U-K-K-A-H. What they did was they put a computer on all known literature. They can do stuff like that. That's how they know if you're cheating on an essay now, because they can tell now who really wrote that. That's kind of cool. So all known uses of the word. There were 12,700,000 for the first one. All right? And it goes for the second one, it goes way down to only 2,444,000. But so which is the right one? Is the majority ruling here? Is it the one is that the right one? Actually, there is a discussion by the rabbis. Imagine that. On stuff like that. And they tear all this stuff apart, and it goes back. Steve was saying, the only correct spelling is in Hebrew, and that is right, because it's a picture word. When you see it, understand it from a Hebrew perspective, that's the intention, and that's. But you can't express it in another language as well. And so they're saying, you got to know Hebrew to connect. The word is dedication, or to dedicate. And if you followed instructions and bought Kevin Jeffrey's book that we had, interesting paragraph in the middle of it, because that same word, the same root word is used in Proverbs of training up a child. The words dedicate, train and dedicate. So there's in dedication there's training. In training there's dedication. You train your children to be dedicated to the Lord. That's the picture. See, when you put this thing in a Hebrew perspective, all this stuff comes to life, huh? It's amazing. Well, I have a good... Is this an appointed time? Is this a Moedim, an appointed time? No, stop. Why are we doing all this? Well, as long as you're doing it wrong, let me give you my sizes and colors, okay, and favorite chocolates. Why are we doing this? It is a big deal. Hanukkah has turned into a big, big holiday. It's not... What is it that we're celebrating? Why do I have to bring that up? Because your family and friends and neighbors and church down the street will say, why do you do that? Well, you better have an answer. Don't just say, well, it's a Jewish thing. No, you haven't. No, the story. It opens doors. In years past, pastors will like off the cuff. You know, they haven't a clue for the most part. And they'll say, well, so what's that all about anyway? And as you begin to tell them, their eyes open, and they go, I didn't know that. And you get open invitations to teach and share with people. And an interesting link, especially this time of the year, has to do with if Antiochus was successful in taking away Jewish identity, Yeshua could not have been born in Bethlehem as was prophesied. It was a direct attempt of Satan to disrupt prophecy and God's promises. And it was thwarted. But they can identify with that. They go, oh, well, I see that. And it's not just history. There's so much more to it. Is it a tradition? Well, there's traditional things that we do that are wonderful. They're great, okay? What is it commemorating? Don't answer out loud, okay? Because you probably get it wrong. Exactly what is it are we remembering? I knew you were just dying to say the candles and stuff like that, right? History? Yeah. Legends? Uh-huh. Traditions? Oh, yeah. Really good ones. Historically, the events that surround Hanukkah, like I said, open the door for the coming and the arrival of the Messiah. It's actually the setting of the stage for his arrival, putting things in order, getting ready. Great picture. But another case of where Satan fails. You'd think he'd get the picture, huh? He hasn't, because if you're watching the news, some of the things I'll be saying this morning about what they did is happening now. Right now. And I bet you haven't connected that. It's happening? Oh, yeah. And you need to be aware of it so you can stay in touch with your representatives and say, we're not doing that. Identity theft. Well, a brief background, because in many years I've done like 3 or 4 parts on this. Today we're just doing the one. The background had to do with Israel is a little teeny country, as you know, and it was a land bridge, still is, between two continents, between Europe and Africa, and three, actually, Asia. Everything comes together in Israel. Now, east of Israel is desert. Okay, so the armies would not invade due east. They would go north, follow the water, the Fertile Crescent, and come down. And in these days, in the Bible times, there's always been a superpower. Who is it? Who's the superpower? Who is the superpower in the world today? Who is it? Don't answer, because it's not us. Be thinking. It's not us, guys. What do we export? What are they buying from? Think about that. Okay. Anyway, sorry, but to be a bearer of bad news. But the superpowers were either the Syrians or the Greeks. Okay. Greece had an empire. Or the Egyptians, the Ptolemies in the south. In between is Israel. No leader wants to fight a war in his own country. You want to fight the war in somebody else's country. And what's right in between these two areas is Israel. And they said, good place to fight. So it was a battleground in years past. And guess what's right in the middle of the battleground? If you look on a map geographically, Megiddo, the Valley of Armageddon. Prophecy comes to life, even in geographical location. In the book of Revelation, it actually tells where the false Messiah's headquarters tent will be located, and it actually uses the word Tel Megiddo. It's a tell. It's not a city today. It actually uses that term at the Tel of Megiddo. It's like, and there you can see before you this gigantic valley, and that's the staging area for the final assault against Jerusalem. Well, the same stuff happened back then, same kind of thing. It was during the what's called 400 silent years. The prophet Malachi is the last writing prophet, no more. Until John the Baptist comes on the scene, we have 400 years. It's called the 400 silent years. It's not silent. Big stuff was going on. Big things that would shape the preparation for Messiah to come and the fulfillment of the Great Commission. It's not all bad. Some of it was actually good. So in those 400 years, you have these superpowers vying back and forth and back and forth and taking turns. Well, it was Greece's turn, Antiochus IV. Antiochus Epiphanes is the guy. And he got some bad information, went down into Egypt, and had a battle he thought he won, but he lost. He was really mad. On the way home, he has to walk through Israel. And he was mad. He was mad. He actually was an insane person. His own people had a nickname. Antiochus Epiphanes means Antiochus the Great. You know, the Great. They called him Epimenes, the madman. His own people did that, okay, because he was nuts. Isn't it interesting how many world leaders in time past have been absolutely nuts? I'm not going to talk about the ones today. But they keep repeats itself, doesn't it? Okay. Well, as he came back into Israel, he was upset. He was mad. And what he did was, before that time, they were influencing the culture. Alexander the Great's idea. His idea was to be one world, one government, one language, one monetary system. Anybody talk about that these days? They call it today one world governance. They don't say government, governance. What's the difference? And they want to use the euro. It's going really well over there, huh? We have friends in Greece. Anyway, be in prayer about all this. But if you look at the pattern of what some people want today and see as a solution, it all, and they say this on television. They say, we are going to do away with all nationalism. Okay, in other words, whatever ethnic background you have will not be recognized. We are the world. We are the people. We are humans. We are not Hispanic. We are not Israeli. We are not. You can go down the list of cultural identity, and they want to take it all away. And part of that is having one language. Alexander the Great wanted one language. Now, if you keep doing this, if you have one government, you're not going to be fighting each other, right? There'll be peace. Yeah. That's what Rome said. Pax Romana, a Roman peace. They didn't used to do with that one either. But you keep walking with that. They're open. It's on television. They're giving these speeches. One monetary system, one name for humans. You know, no specific countries, no ethnic groups, no chosen people, no chosen land. Do you see easily where that goes? Oh, and by the way, while we're at it, how about no chosen religion? We'll all be one. And it'll be a religion of tolerance. We tolerate each other. We get along with each other. And you know what? To a total humanist, that sounds pretty good. But you know what? It's the same story that Satan keeps bringing up again. The idea was, okay, you Jewish people are really, you're uptight and you're legalistic and you have all these laws. Loosen up a little bit. Be like us. Be like Greeks. Loosen up. And so what they wanted to do was introduce Greek culture, which was immoral. You guys have all these moral laws. Have fun. Loosen up. Enjoy life. Okay? And basically, it was an opposition to all that God had instructed. And many Jewish people, because I know for you who are Jewish by blood, it is tough. Because part of the calling is you're different. Okay, you're unique. You have a unique identity. What Hanukkah is about is that God wants you to retain that unique identity, period. Not be absorbed in some other culture. What's the sound on TV is dead wrong. This is a great time to say it. That's what Hanukkah is all about. But to lose your identity, and the word is assimilation. Be like everybody else. You can just, if we're all the same, takes care of a lot of problems, huh? Like, you guys are really arrogant. You say you're chosen people by God? Come on. They're uptight about that. Are you aware of that? People are mad about that these days? That Israel's a chosen land? No. How can you say? Isn't that amazing? And that's where it's all going. Alexander the Great tried to do it. And he said, okay. And it was appealing to Jewish people because it made life easier. And easier means you can do what you want. That's appealing. Who has that idea? He's called the devil. It's okay. Do whatever you want. Don't listen to God's instructions that are so, they just crimp you up so tight. They just restrict you. Loosen up. Do what you want. He started that stuff back in the garden. God, he just wants you to know how much fun you can really have. It's a lie of the enemy. And today's sermon, we've done that in years past. We get into all the details of what Hellenism is all about. The word Hellen is Greek. So that to be a Greek, you were a Hellen. But it's you assimilated into a Greek culture, which meant if you were Jewish, you left a Hebraic culture, a Hebraic worldview, and took on a Greek worldview, a total different way of thinking, total different way of thinking. And it was appealing to some Jews because you could do whatever you want. You know what? Try that sometime, doing whatever you want for a while. See how it works. See how it works. My guess is you'll end up on the psychiatrist's chair and then in prison after that because you can't do what you want. We need rules. And these are the rules. God gave us the rules. He gave us the instructions. And I'm looking for the verse where it's easy. I can't find it. Come on, help me out on that one, okay? I can't find that. But God says we're not all one world, one people. Yeshua died for all people, but there's an Abrahamic covenant. Well, God made a special agreement with a certain group of people. Oh, that's pride and arrogance. I didn't do that. God did that. And he set them apart from all other people. Oh, this is terrible. And this is going to get the Bible banned as a book right here because it says three times. It says that God says that Israel is his special treasure. Three times. You can't say that. That's just not inclusive, is it? That these are his special treasure. And he says it three times, they're the apple of my eye. We can't have that. We didn't change this. Are you aware that they're doing that? They're changed in the Bible? They are. They've tried this a long time before. It doesn't work. Okay, it just plain won't work. But if you look at the reasoning is, see, we're not tolerant. There's a little issue on homosexuality. Oh, man, send my tape to the right guys. I'm in trouble, right? I mean, we take a biblical stand. We didn't write this. We tell you what God said, what he wants us to do and not do, what is sin, what is not sin. He said, what is food, what is not food? Well, I didn't invent that. Eat all the bats you want, though, okay? Just feel free. They're better with beer batter and chocolate. People wanted to eat what they want. Go ahead, get sick. It's okay. What cracked me up was all this on TV this last week. Everybody's just, they're saying they don't like being all this religious constriction that you have to follow rules. Just do what you want to do. Eat what you want to eat. Fornicate with who you want to fornicate. Seriously speaking, that's what is going on. And that's exactly what they did back then. They turned God's laws in reverse. And they said it's not only okay to commit fornication, to commit adultery, it's encouraged, and it's a part of your new religion. It's worship. You can come to the temple. There are temple prostitutes there. Wow, what a religion, right? Sounds to me like that's abusing women a bit, huh? Women's rights, their value. What happened to Proverbs 31? That doesn't fit, does it? It doesn't fit. But that's what Antiochus did. He turned the temple into a house of prostitution. I mean there's some things that you probably haven't read that I can't tell you this morning in this room of what he did that are horrid. I mean, despicable things. And it was in God's face, in his face. It's not your temple, it's my temple. His purpose, and he wrote it. We have it in writing. His purpose was that he wanted Jewish people to forget who they are and where they came from. Have no memory of a heritage. That's subtly happening today. It's subtly happening today. We, in a Messianic Jewish congregation, stand absolutely, entirely opposed to that concept. That is anti-Semitism. We encourage you, if you're Jewish by blood, to be the best Jew you can be. Okay, you don't change religions. You're a Jewish person who believes in a Jewish Messiah named Yeshua. Nothing else changes. Your heritage remains intact. We teach it. Traditions, we teach it. And we want you to know which is which, by the way. And most of Hanukkah is tradition. And it's great. It's good. It's symbolic of who he is and what he does. But he declared it a crime to be Jewish. Somebody else did that too. Who was that? Oh, Hitler. Punishable by death. Right. Wait a minute. Humanism came out of what country? Oh, Germany. It says we're getting better and better and we are one. Humanism is what brought the Holocaust. Along with believers who don't stand up for what's right. Don't do that next time. You know what? You're a lot better off dead if you stand up and do the right thing than being a coward and not and watching your neighbors die. Don't do that. You know, I have a secret. If you go to the back of the book, okay, the martyrs in heaven get special stuff. Okay, just keep that in mind. Okay. In all seriousness, why do they? Because they put their money where their mouth was. They laid their life down for what they believed. For the sake of Yeshua, they died. The Maccabees died for this, for Torah, to preserve Torah. They could have said, they died for this book. We can buy 10 different versions at the store. We need to be thankful for the time in which we live, that we are, at least today, free to come in this room and talk like this. But Antiochus was determined to erase all traces of Judaism, steal Jewish identity, total assimilation. And again, he states in writing his purpose is that you might forget. Don't forget where you came from, your culture, your heritage. If you're some other cultural group, this church is from the South Pacific Islands. Maintain your culture. The missionaries of today never tell you to change cultures. Yeshua fits into any culture of the world. That our message fits anywhere. And if we don't try and change who they are, leave them who they are. Like, you don't try and change a Jewish person, present the Jewish Messiah. Anyway, he would have no cultural memory, no tradition. Traditions are important, by the way. Family traditions are important. Okay, it keeps you connected. And he wanted no connection to a family tree, which meant Abraham and the Abrahamic covenant. The Abrahamic covenant. Well, here's a list, the short list of what he did. Okay, he declared Orthodox Judaism obsolete. Declared the scriptures obsolete. It was an invention of Moses. Moses went up on Mount Sinai and decided what he wanted to write. That's what he said, right? Okay. All biblical sacrifices were obsolete. But it's okay to do whatever you want. In fact, we encourage you to offer pigs, is what he said. The Moedim. Well, we're still going to have them, but they're now in honor to the Greek gods. Okay, so he reversed them. Bible reading, Bible study, practice of Scripture, Torah observance that we're talking about, including circumcision and celebrating Shabbat, were punishable by death. That's where this went. It got worse, actually. When he came back from Egypt, he attacked Jerusalem on Shabbat. And we see in the ancient writings that there were Orthodox Jews who refused to fight on Shabbat. And the enemy still does the same thing. You know, Egypt and Syria attacked Israel on Yom Kippur. Remember that? 1973. And what they did then is they got the rabbis together quickly and made a specific ruling that when you're being attacked on Shabbat, it's okay to fight back. By the way, they did the same thing in 73 because they were fasting on Yom Kippur and dropping over in the Golan Heights. And the rabbis said, it's okay, eat. You're saving your country. When it comes to rescuing the land of Israel, they said, do it. Fight back and fight to win. Interesting ruling. That one and this one is parallel ruling. He proclaimed Zeus to be the god of Israel. He erected a statue of Zeus, but he put his face on it, on the altar at the temple. He forced people to worship the statue. He made them bow down. And he filled the temple with drunken revelry and prostitutes. And any practice of Judaism was punishable by death. Any at all. And if you're a mother and you have your child circumcised, they kill the child in your presence, and then they kill you. Only because you followed these instructions. Okay. You know, if you put this in perspective, the Maccabees are heroes. They stood up, a small group stood up against an empire, and they beat him. So no circumcision, the sign of the covenant. No Shabbat, no Torah. No temple. No holidays. No fun. Basically, your identity. That's it, folks. That is it. And, you know, the whole thing about Torah, the Jewish people really don't keep Torah. Yeah, but Torah keeps the Jewish people. Think about it. On Yom Kippur, all over the world, where are they? Doing the same thing in a synagogue. Okay? Torah does keep his people together. It still works today. He had a parade in honor of himself. And everybody who came to watch the parade were killed. He's nuts. Okay? All known copies of the Torah were burned. Which means they had to hide them. They drove a herd of swine through the temple, made the priests eat the swine, then kill the priests. And then, finally, the big one was, he said, by the way, I am God. I am God. Okay. Well, no Jewish identity. Today, subtly, that approach is being taken. What's interesting is that some of the leaders are atheistic Jews who are rising to the front of saying this. They're in rebellion against this. Isn't it interesting? He wanted to erase all biblical values and replace them, replacement theology, with his own values, which are do whatever you want. Have fun. The bottom line was that sin was declared to be okay. Sin is okay. In fact, it's encouraged. We have new rules. Have a good time. No restrictions. What we remember at Hanukkah, it's not just remembering, it's something else. We remember the cleansing on the 25th of Kislev. 2 years after, it was the same date that statue was erected of Antiochus. Same date. Isn't it interesting? God works with dates all through Scripture. The temple was cleansed and then rededicated with a different perspective of how thankful we are to have this and to be able to do this. And the temple was the center of their worship. At this time, we remember miracles. Miracles. What are the miracles? The miracles of God's deliverance and protection. There was a small group of farmers that fought the Greek army and beat him. Okay? We remember God's preservation of Jewish identity. Paul would later teach in Romans, the gifts and call about Jews, the gifts and calling of God are irrevocable. And he refers to Jeremiah 31. By the way, Jeremiah said, there will always be Jews. This attempt will not ever succeed. And the reason is that according to God's word and his promises and prophecies, for the end times events to take place, you must have Jews and you must have an Israel. And so no matter what the world does, there will be Jews, there will be an Israel. We are to remember, oh, and by the way, when we put it in perspective, remember the preservation of the identity of his chosen people. You're going to get in trouble by saying those terms. He chose somebody to be special. You know what he did? He really did. He did. That he did. If you're Jewish by blood today, you are special. You have a special calling. You're set apart in a special way. You're a special treasure. You're the apple of his eye. I'm not Jewish. Do I think he doesn't love me? I know he loves me. You have a unique calling. I recognize that. You have a unique identity. Retain that. And teach it to your kids and your family. Be the best Jew you can be. What does Isaiah say the Jews are supposed to do? Be a light to the nations. Be a light to the nations. I like that song by Marty at the offering. Okay, when they're a light to the nations, what do? They bring this to them. And they didn't do it. So Yeshua said, okay, guys, one more shot at this, the Great Commission. Take this to the nations and teach them this. We remember the cost of protecting that freedom. I mean, we're getting close. What's that cost? Oh, that means that you might die. That means that you might die. Now, you say today, you know what? I've already made that decision. I'm going to stand there, and I'm going to be killed. What if they take your child, begin to torture your child? Okay? I mean, Satan is cruel. He's mean. He knows how, you know, it's not so easy. Pray that you are not in those circumstances or your children. Pray that his hand of protection keeps you in a place where either the enemy can't see you or your. We'll remember the cost of that freedom, the cost of their lives, to protect their faith. You know, last week we had Thanksgiving, and a part of that was being thankful for his provision, but that we can do this. The pilgrims came here because they wanted to do what they wanted to do in their faith. So as we remember those, the opening scripture this morning was, I said, Paul talks in Hanukkah talk in a lot of his teachings. Romans 12, 1 and 2. Pivotal verse of the book of Romans. I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God. By the way, Paul, the apostle, the Pharisee, school of Gamaliel, 22 PhDs, whatever, I don't know. He could have said, you know what? I'm telling you what to do. I'm just plain telling you, do this. He doesn't do that. I beseech you. That means I plead with you. Because it's your choice. I plead with you to make this choice. To present your bodies. Make a presentation of your bodies. Your bodies. If he has your body, he's got you. Okay? A living sacrifice. You know, I don't find the verse where God says, I want you to go die for me. That's what Yeshua did. He says, I want you to live for me. And when you think it through, it's a lot tougher to live for him. When I die for him, it's, you know, quick. Living for him is tough. It's going to get tougher. But that's the call. I want you to live for me. And how I want you to start that process is that you present your body a sacrifice. You go to the temple and you make a dead sacrifice. Now I want a living one. You. To live your life dedicated to me. A living sacrifice. Holy, set apart, acceptable, which is your reason. And Paul says, this makes sense. It's reasonable. It's an act of worship where you say, Lord, I present myself to you in service to you. Use me. Here I am, send me. But you have to mean that. And then he goes on to the Greek stuff. Don't be conformed to the world. It's so easy, isn't it, to do that, to be conformed. New styles, new dress, new food. Don't be conformed. Be conformed to this. By the way, Paul will later say, be conformed to the image of the Messiah. He's our role model. He's our example. He said, be like him. The word messianic means we're like him. Don't be conformed to the world. That's the Greek thing. But be transformed by the renewing of your mind. A different way of thinking. We don't think like they do. We shouldn't. That you may prove what he said, what is the will of God. The will of God. Now, a little jewel in those verses to make it come to a life in a picture is this. The words that Paul is using are these. Don't be conformed. Conformity is the word that's used of the chameleon lizard. I used to go to the fair and buy a chameleon, and they change colors. You put it on something red, it turns red. Put it on something green, it'll turn green. He said that picture is, in other words, people blend with wherever they are. I'm going to go here, I'm going to blend with you. I'm not going to stand out, I'm going to blend with you. He said, don't do that. You're hiding. Don't blend. You're supposed to stand out. You're the light. We're a light to the nations. You can't do that if you're blending, conforming. He said, don't be the chameleon. But, you in biology, he said, be transformed. Ah, you eighth grade science people. The Greek word metamorphosar. Metamorphosis. We did that, you all did that, right? When you were in third grade, you caught a caterpillar. You stuck it in the jar with some green things in there. And you washed it and it turned into a butterfly. Doesn't look anything like the caterpillar, does it? It is the caterpillar, but it was transformed. That's the word that's used. That's the word that's used. Seriously, if you think about it, you would say, if you didn't know that was true, there's no way that beautiful butterfly that flies in all the colors was that worm. No way. It was. Do you see that that's a picture of you? God can take the worm and make it into a butterfly. And you can fly with beauty. I mean, everybody loves butterflies. That's the picture. But that happens when you present your bodies to him in service. He is the one that transforms you. You can't take a book and figure out how to do it. No, he transforms you. I got to say this today. But when I met Susan, am I in trouble yet? Yeah, I am already. Okay. She, when I met Susan, do we have to turn the tape off for this part? There I was. Okay. When I met Susan, she was a new believer. And so I never knew the old Susan before she was born again. Never knew that person. But back then she would kind of talk about that. I'm going, there was no connection. I go, that can't be you. Shall I tell him what you did? No, I guess I won't do that. Okay. But it was like I couldn't connect because that's not this person. I mean, she was totally transformed and changed. You did what? You were what? No way. And then the truth of it, the confirmation came when I went with her to her high school reunion and met those other people. And they go, You gotta be kidding me. What do you do again now? What? And they knew her before and they saw the transformation. It's like, you are not that person that I knew. I go, that's right. That's right, because he does the transforming. And he makes the worm into a butterfly. You want to be a butterfly or a worm? Don't be dumb, okay? If you're a worm, what happens? Frogs eat you. Lizards eat you. I'm only saying this because that's the term Paul used. Remember, don't be a lizard. Don't be the chameleon. Okay? Lizard. Don't be a lizard. But be a butterfly. And you do that when you don't conform and when you're transformed and commit totally to him. But that's an act of your volition. That's something you do. You do that. You make a decision. I want to give him all that I am. Doesn't that kind of sound like the Shema a little bit? Well, I guess so. And when I said all of you right now, all of what you are is wrapped up in your body, you can't, I gave him my heart. That's nice, he wants your body. Because when you go out tonight late and sin, it's going to be in your body, okay? Don't give me the out-of-body experience thing. I saw that on TV at the news. This lady's in court. I was out of body. So you can't hold me accountable for what I did. Seriously. No, God holds you accountable for what you do because you do it in your body. So Paul was pretty brilliant. He said, if the Lord has your body, he's got you. I'll go one step further. Are we ready for the second offering yet? Just kidding. At pastor's conferences, they'll say, if the Lord has your wallet, he's got you. Think about that. Some people withhold just little things here and there. Anyway, when I met Susan and met others who knew her, it was like, I can't connect or identify with who that person was. I don't know her, but I know this one. I know this one. And I got to tell you this, that what God had done was he had prepared her for me and vice versa, because I would not have been attracted to that other person at all. Okay, not at all. We wouldn't talk. But this new one I couldn't stop talking to. Okay. I'm digging a hole. All right. Going deeper. Finally, I'll end with this. See, Paul would say finally go on for 10 more chapters, right? Well, I'm not going to do that. It's really easy for us who are not Jewish to be a part of a messianic congregation, and a key phrase is this, to identify who we are, our identity. And they say, well, how does it work with Gentiles? Do you convert or do you become Jews? No. The picture in Acts 15, the picture of the olive tree is one olive tree, two kinds of branches, but they're together in the same tree with the same roots. Pardon me. So we as non-Jews identify with Jews, but not as Jews. Do you see the difference in that? I identify with you who are Jewish. I don't have a Christmas tree. We got lots of Hanukkahs around, and decorations and all that stuff. I identify with all of this, but I don't identify as a Jew. When somebody asks me, are you Jewish? No. And I told a story about our granddaughter, Rebecca, years ago. Terry's reading the Bible at her devotion. She was little, and she came to the word Gentile. And Rebecca says, what's a Gentile? And Terry said, well, you know, Gentiles are people who are not Jewish, you know, like us. We're not Jewish. Rebecca said, we're not Jewish? Mom said, no. She says, well, let me ask you this. Okay, we do Shabbat. Okay, we eat kosher. We build a sukkah. She went down the whole list of how we live our life. And she says, we do all that, and you're telling me that we're not Jewish? She says, that's right. We have identified with Jewish people and God's word and his instructions. And it's like, because part of the identification is the doing of the things. And we do them with Yeshua as the focal point, as the center. Now, where I'm going with this, and I'm going to end here, is that for people who are not Jewish, it's sometimes easy to get a little bit confused on the identity. And we look for our identity in our Judaism. Don't do that, because today it's rabbinic. It is not the Judaism of 2,000 years ago. Our identity, Jew and Gentile, is in Yeshua. Our identity is in Him. A Jewish Messiah with Jewish disciples born in the Jewish land, prophesied about by Jewish prophets. Okay, you got the point, right? But our identity is in Him. Paul, I forgot the number of times in the book of Ephesians alone, says in Him, in Him, in Him. We're in Him. We're in the same tree. Two kinds of branches. Our identity is not in rabbinical practice. But please hear me. There's nothing wrong with most of it. We do a lot of it. Most of the practice of Hanukkah is rabbinic. Most of it is. As long as you do that, but you can see Yeshua and God's hand and God's mighty works in His word in all of it. So we celebrate it. We do it. We do it. It doesn't say anywhere to light the Hanukkah candles. But we do it. I do it. Okay? So, but our identity is in Him. In Him. Go back to what Paul's saying. In Him. In Him. In Him. And at the end of Paul's life, he said this. He was on trial. They were saying, okay, give me the bottom line, Paul. He said, in Him, I live, I move, I have my being. It's in Him. Not in the Pharisees, not in the Sanhedrin, not in the scribes, in the Messiah. If we can get that right, we got it. We got it, okay? Let's all stand.